Today on ABCDTOS, Patterns of Force.
Hey everybody, welcome to ABCDTOS, the only show on the internet that goes through every classic Star Trek episode, and by classic I mean the 1960s series, in alphabetical order, from All Our Yesterdays to Wolf in the Fold. I'm Joe Mazel.
I'm P3 Taylor.
I'm Tom Taylor.
And I'm John Gill.
Oh,
and I'm here today to talk to you about this.
What did you do?
Gil.
Sorry, whoa.
Gil.
I think somebody drugged me, you guys. Oh, jeez.
Well, as that might be a hint, today we are discussing Patterns of Force, or, as most people know it, the Nazi episode.
Yeah.
The one with the Nazis.
The one with all the Nazis.
The Friends episode, yeah. We call them.
Yeah. That episode, strangely, one of the unaired episodes of Friends, the one with all the Nazis. Although,
there's an episode of Seinfeld that's the one with all... they weren't afraid to do it.
Let's be precise here. It's the one with all the Nazis.
Nazis.
Shatner spends a lot of time talking about Nazis. Let's start at it. What a weird conceit. That's like, hey, let's make all of our Jews dress up in Nazi stuff. It's an odd, like.
I don't think they were Jewish so much as they were Zeon.
Well,
tomato, tomato.
Shatner, and Nimoy, yeah.
Yeah, well, but I had forgotten that it was Zeon, and I'd forgotten that their names are like David and Isaac. And
Isn't there one that's Ibram or something?
Yeah. All I kept thinking of, I think I referenced it when we talked about Let This Be Your Last Battlefield, was the Star Trek, the spec script that, what's his name, writes on Mad Men after he leaves the ad agency.
And
And he's like,
hippie.
The Negrons,
he's like Harry Kirshner.
The Negrons are being enslaved. that's all I kept thinking about with this.
No, wait, since we're talking about that, obviously Zeon's Ion, I get it.
Hmm.
What is the, but the Nazi planet, like what they're called, the Ecotians? Is that it? Am I missing something there?
No,
I don't think so. The one that
seems
I missed,
like a missed opportunity.
I'm sure on our Facebook chat, somebody's going to shout at us like, that was an old Germanic tribe, you morons.
Duh.
Yeah.
Didn't y'all go to Sunday school?
and by Sunday school, I mean medieval history.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
college?
Basically what Sunday school was.
Yes.
The one that I didn't, the one that didn't hit me, like a lot of them, it's just like, oh, duh. Like, the names are just obviously, traditional Jewish names. The hero of the rebellion, what's her name? The girl here?
Daris.
Which is like Sarah backwards almost. It's like Daris, yeah. So it's like Sarah D.
Oh, okay.
But then the one kind of...
Anne Frank.
Yeah.
Annas Frank Dol.
Karf. Anyway.
Melicon,
yes.
Brooks
goes the bus driver on you can't do that on television.
There's the one guy who's like the he's kind of like one of the higher ups but not the higher up, whose name is Eneg, and I'm totally over my head until I read it in on the thing that Eneg is of course Gene backwards, and so that was a little little toot of the hat to Gene Roddenberry, great bird of the galaxy.
Gotta get in there.
The greatest Nazi of them all.
let's do a real quick overview here. That the it's Patterns of Force, season 2, episode 21, or season 2, episode 23 in production order. So pretty close. Originally aired on February 16th, 1968. I say original title, but there's two different people came up with like, hey, what if we make a Nazi episode? Patterns of Force came a little bit later, which is was it John Meredith Lucas who wrote this one?
I want to say
John Meredith Lucas.
He directed and produced it.
Directed by Vincent McAvity.
Wait, what? Yeah. I guess he just produced. Mm-hmm. He wrote it then.
He wrote it. Yeah, credits. John Meredith Lucas. Mm-hmm. And originally there was a another pitch, like another just like, you know, kind of like log line idea, or I don't know how far it got, but Paul Schneider wrote a story outline called Tomorrow the Universe, which I think is a pretty good name for an episode.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He's the same guy who wrote Balance of Terror and Squire of Gothos. And it may, and like they basically took the two and they're like, his is better, so we're going to go with that one. And that, I don't know. It makes me wonder what would that guy's. I want to read that script now. The guy that wrote Balance of Terror, I want to read his Nazi script.
Yeah.
But
he also wrote Squire Gothos, though.
Yeah, which I like. But we'll get favorites. To it when we get there. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Are you challenging me to a duel?
But I also wanted to suggest another title from the actual text of the episode. Basically, later when they're kind of accepted into the resistance, into the underground, and they explain, they're like, look, John Gill is one of our men, and he's been sent. Look, it's like the boilerplate speech of like, okay, look, we're not supposed to interfere, but one of our guys showed up and he made this into a planet. It's just look, we've done this like 10 times already. But when they tell that to these guys, I think it's Staris. It's just like, the Fuhrer is an alien? And I was like, that should have been the name of the episode. The Fuhrer is an alien.
Well, that'll get their butts in the seats.
Yeah. Right.
Fuhrer is an alien. I got to see this.
I got to see that at the drive-in.
It's either that or stop the Nazis. I want to get off.
Right.
So the... basically, it starts out where they're like, oh, we're supposed to... we're basically meeting up with my old history professor... I'll read the Google blurb. Crew of the USS Enterprise are on the trail of a missing historian. Search leads Kirk and Spock to the planet Ecos, where the streets are decorated with swastikas and patrolled by jackbooted soldiers. And I like that they do that. They have this little like, oh, we're not sure what's going on, so we're gonna. And then the cold open is just they get like attacked, but it's like, oh, that's weird. They shouldn't have this kind of technology. And then they're worried. Then. When they come back from the opening credits, they really quickly just summarize like, well, we were just attacked by an alien culture that shouldn't have that kind of technology. And it was like, well, you just totally summarize. You could have really excised that whole cold open, I think. Like, right. You could have just kind of started where you were, yeah. Like, and then maybe gotten to the Nazi part. That's a much more like much more of a grab you for the opening credits. But
well, we really don't skimp on the Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, once it kicks in, what does it kick in?
Also, it gives us time to get a. I forget if we were going to count these or anything, but my instructor at the academy. We got one of those in this opening. Mm. Yeah.
It's what's the balance of like if you have like my instructor at the academy? Oh, there you go. My instructor at the academy and the impatient Commodore, they get to team up on one side and then the dead red shirts on the other side. Like who do we have more of by the end of the season? Dead red shirts is going to be. But
that's probably.
We get a weird something that pops up every once in a while, I feel like, but really should get used more as a subcutaneous transponder.
I was going to say, when does that come up before? Because I feel like my first question was, why don't they do that all the time?
Yeah, really.
In No Time to Die? Did you guys not watch that?
That's true.
That was an excellent Star Trek. All the times that could have come in handy. And I feel like it's this, and it's not subcutaneous, but like the little piece of like headphone covering styrofoam that he puts on his back in Star Trek VI. Like,
yeah.
Those two things, only these couple of times when it's like, we really need it. Like, why not need it all the time? Like,
why wouldn't they always have them?
Yeah,
like permanently in them. If you're in Starfleet, you got one.
Yeah,
smart blood.
It just makes sense, just in case you get lost. It's like your cat, you know, microchipping your cat.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just make sure you don't lose any Starfleet members.
If it's good enough for your cat, it's good enough for your captain.
But then I also did have a moment of because, like I said, when I was watching this, I had just gotten my booster shot, and then they're having this moment where like, all right, we're going to inject this in you so we can track all your movements. And I was like, oh, yay. I just got one of those
meetings. Beat coincidence, seriously.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even turn the TV on. I just walked in.
And this is why Lauren Bobart shouldn't be giving you the booster shot.
Yeah, exactly.
She's terrible.
Anyway. She is. Then so they go and get in disguise. I love it when they do like a rough like kind of earth, you know, it's like similar to their disguises from
City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah, City on the Edge. Yeah. Where it's just like, we're just going to dress like kind of generic, like kind of, you know, like Steinbeckian nothings, you know?
One of those pea coat hat guys.
Yeah.
I just hopped off a freight train. Yeah. How do you do?
But so I like that. And then they, you know, they're like, oh, hey, look, everything's Nazi. And they
springtime for Hitler down here.
Yeah. Then they make their way. They try to sneak their way in, and they do a good job. There's a nice little, I don't know. I like the way that it progresses, where they do a little, you know, they have little Kirk and Spock moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
while they're doing the whole, you know, he's like, oh, like you know, that helmet covers a multitude of sins or something like that. Mm-hmm. He says to him when, because Spock's helmet, he's got
again,
the helmet that covers
again,
his ears.
Sins, devil, yeah. Always with yeah. The
say.
I do want to cut in just for a second before we go too far and like. For an episode about the greatest evil of the 20th century, arguably, this episode has a lot of yucks in it.
But I think
there's a
kind
weird
of,
amount of jokes.
But I think that's intentional. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of solid yucks. There's a lot of nicely timed, you know, non-heavy, just kind of light. Like that little thing where Spock is like, you know, they get a uniform for Kirk, like an SS officer.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I think he'd make a great SS officer or something. It's just like a quick little cut of like Kirk like giving him a look like, huh?
Yeah.
And they cut away to the next scene and it's like not, there's no boop 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 or anything like that. It's just they it's a look and they move on and they do things like that and you're like, oh, you know, Star Trek can be kind of light and good and satisfying if they don't if they just take the time to edit things well and act things,
especially when dealing with a genocidal regime.
Yes. Yeah.
But I was a little surprised that it wasn't as solemnic as I remember it, because I haven't seen the episode probably since I was 15.
Yeah.
I would guess that would be awful. I think that would be, that'd be really hard to
They didn't do that back then.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. You're right. I mean, there was a show called Hogan's Heroes. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. Hogan's Heroes existed.
It was you should see my back tattoo of it. Yeah.
I got Richard Dawson.
I know nothing, Colonel Hogan.
I love the idea of just like having a back tattoo of a variety of Richard Dawson roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So the Running Man, Hogan's Heroes, and Family Feud. That's all I got.
And a match game panelist, Richard Dawson.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, smoking a cigarette on the match game. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, three sheets to the wind. In all of them, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
At least three.
So they
kissing ladies like left and right on the just reminiscing about Richard Dawson.
Well, you don't get that from reruns of Gilligan's Island. with the boat.
They get captured. They get whipped, which is another like, here's the thing where Nazis whip two guys. And
this is clear beefcake. Excuse for some beefcake here.
Well, this is where all the K&S fandom comes from.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, man.
Yeah, right.
Believe me. Yeah. There's some slash fiction about this episode, I'm sure.
It was a good. The things that I like about this.
things that I like about my naked Leonard Nimoy.
Things that I like about my slash fiction about Patterns of Forces.
Spock's green welts.
Passing copies around.
You know, they're very obviously just like quick, you know, like lipstick or you know.
I think it's a highlighter.
Like, they're.
But it shows an effort.
Yeah. Spock's and Kirk's being different. It's a neat little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how Spock is not really reacting is, I guess, I know, I'm being whipped, correct.
Ow. Ow.
Ow. And then also, Leonard Nimoy is Slim and Harry. He shops in the Slim and Harry section.
Slim and Harry.
I walked into one of those stores by accident once, and I just turned right on my heel and went right back out. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I was looking for tall and gangly. I'm sorry.
Yeah. They're down the block.
All right.
I was impressed at how, apparently, and that was this was the only time that we ever see him without a shirt. And Roddenberry was like, you gotta, you know, it makes sense to be in this episode. So it's like, it's sensible nudity. It's tasteful. But like, if you're going to take your shirt off, we got to shave you. And he was like, I'm not going to do that. And they're like, come on, look at Shatner. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. Like, you can.
Yeah, I am looking at Shatner.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Oddly enough, that was the same argument he tried with Grace Lee Whitney. And it did not work at all.
Yeah.
And look where she ended up.
Can you imagine if Kirk's the slashes on his back, if that was like at all realistic blood, that would be a horror show. He's got like most of his back is covered in like Tiger Man stripes. It's a mess.
And then, like, you know, in about, you know, 10 minutes, like, little Slim and Harry is climbing all over him. He's like standing on them and like, you know, and at first I was like, oh, but that's gotta, and then he, I like that they call attention to it, but it is, it seems like it would be a lot worse than it is.
Yeah. Which, no, it seemed it would make you pass out from the pain of somebody stepping on your welts and open sores.
Again, I think if you're setting the show in on Nazi planet, you have to be a little light. You can't be too like glib, but you gotta be a little bit light. You gotta have these, moments. There's a fun kind of Shatnerism of sorts when he's like he's guiding, I've got these prisoners, and he's kind of urging them on, and he goes move, like he says move in a weird way. He's like move.
Yeah,
I was like, what? That's neat. I just wrote it in little letters, move. and then also there's a like I mean, I don't know if it was they have to have laughed about this on set at the time. I'm assuming, but there's a thing where they get into the lab and they're poking around. They find the communicators and he's like, "All right, now we just need our phasers." And Spock says, "The phasers? I do not see them." And I was like, "I do not see them." It's like, yeah, that had to have been nobody laughed about that. I do not see them. Come on, you got the guy who doesn't use contractions over here talking about how he doesn't see something. But anyway, that they got over it. They went, they snuck into the underground, and then there's an interesting moment of kind of like pretend double crossery where all of a sudden the Gestapo shows up and they're like, aha, we got you. And they're like, what? Like everybody seems a little confused. They're like, well, we're gonna turn you in. And they basically, in not revealing themselves to be double agents, which they're not, they pass the test. And then the members of the resistance who are also integrated into the party are like, we just needed to make sure that you weren't pretending. Mm-hmm. Like we were pretending. It's like but my note on that, like, as they all, like, pile in, they've got all the members of Resistance there at gunpoint. My note is they also captured Meathead, because there's a guy there. If you look, there's a guy standing behind them who's just got, like, you know, kind of, like, chin Rob length, Reiner straight hair. Long, you know, straight oh, wow. long hair. He's a little balding on top, and he's got kind of a mustache. I'm like, oh, they got Meathead. I didn't know he was a part of the Zeon Resistance. Or the eco. Wait, I keep Zeons are the ones being oppressed, right?
Yes.
Right. All right. Yeah.
That makes sense. And
there's that part in that scene in that cave. I forget if it's before or after that, but the one guy's telling our guy who was in prison with Kirk and Spock, he's like, oh yeah, your girlfriend? Yeah, they got her in the street. They gunned her down.
Yeah.
And she laid there for hours and hours and people walked by and spat on her. And then, like, a steamroller came and ran over and stuff. And then a marching band. And
the USC marching band played Louie Louie. Yeah.
And it finally ended with, like, a guy in a white suit with a garbage can and a shovel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I got it. The love of my life is it. I get it. Thank you. Thank you, pal.
Yeah, and then they hatch a plan. They're like, all right, we got to get to the Fuhrer. That's what they say, the Fuhrer is an alien. We got to get to the Fuhrer. If I can only get to him, we can convince him. And they're like, all right, let's go. Let's try it out. And they do this this thing.
Kind of like it's a toy doll song, the Fuhrer is an alien.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, I could really see that.
You almost just got me to try to do a toy doll's impression, but I've never tried to do one. So I'm like, that's not going to work if I do it live. I'm going to be embarrassed by that. So,
or will it work better than anything you could possibly imagine?
Who knows? I got to workshop these things with my kids first for a little bit before I bring them out into public.
Hey, kids, early 80s punk band, British.
Oh, they've heard them. They've heard them.
Yeah, just like...
So they hatch this plan where they're like, all right, we're going to dress up like a film crew. And we're going to film the hero of the resistance. I mean, the daughter of the, what's the hero of the fatherland, whatever she is. Darius is going to be, we're going to pretend like we're filming her reaction to this whole thing. We're doing a documentary on her and that's going to get us in. And it works. Although I got to say.
The theme is that she turned in her father. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Gestapo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like her father was like apparently a high-ranking resistance guy, and then he was like, great, if you turn me in, I'll sacrifice myself. You turn me in, it'll curry favor, and you'll be, you can rise up the ranks. And but they're the worst film crew. They're like, they're totally not pretending to be. They're worse than like, I don't even know. They're like, you know, they're not as good as like Gonzo or something. They're like, they're just like moving the camera, like all the lights around, and they're like, yeah, yeah, exactly. They're just like, look, and we're move over here, and we're gonna get a shot of you in front of this, and then like moving the camera wildly and like holding the lights, moving them around while they're filming, like
more glare.
Well, I mean, to be fair, these actors on a television show that are written and directed by people in the television industry are completely unfamiliar with how film crews work.
Exactly.
So you can't, I mean, they're making it up as they go along. I mean, come on, you know, don't be too hard on them.
It would be interesting to note, like, how does William Shatner's style of directing progress between this episode and Star Trek V?
Not at all. Not much. Apparently.
No. A little less handheld. That's about it.
But on the other hand, do we really need somebody like doing light meter readings like 15 times in a row before anything is shot.
Laying down track.
That could have been many of us has been to film school. It's really boring.
That could have been their whole thing, though. The one guy can, the one guy in my notes, remember, I keep, as I'm doing this, I'm fan casting these with people in the kind of comedy slash podcast community.
Oh, yeah.
And I think our guy from the Resistance, whatever is, what was his character's name? It was something, David
the guy
or something.
Who vaguely reminds me of Roman Polanski. It's not Isaac,
Isaac or whatever.
Yeah, Isaac. It's funny because having just recently seen The Eternals, I'm also just like, wait a minute, is that, that's another one where it's like, oh, let's take some ancient names and mess them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I want that guy to be Adam Scott in my production of this.
Oh, so sure. Yeah.
The Adam Scott guy is, they could have had him just do the light meter and then distract everybody and be like, okay, wait, we didn't know, what is this? He could have been the DP, the cinematographer, and been like keeping everybody busy with like a tape measure and a light meter. And they could have just gone and totally, you know, brought down all of Nazi Germany in the time while he was setting up his shot.
With the now navigator of the...
now I want Adam Scott to play Roman Polanski.
There you go.
And I'm just imagining like, hey, Bruce Lee, did you kill my wife? One of the fun Manson trial things is that at one point Bruce Lee was a suspect.
Right.
Aww.
Just in Roman Polanski's mind.
Yeah.
Not in anybody else's. Just because he found the pair of glasses that kind of look like Bruce Lee's glasses.
And Bruce Lee was a one man killing squad who theoretically had done it. Don't forget that part.
We all know that he could kill someone with his bare hands.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
I'm sorry, I'm just being the version from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. with your Adam Scott casting, though, does that mean that this guy is the grandfather of the navigator or the helmsman of the Defiant in First Contact? That was Adam Scott is, he's the...
Oh, wow.
He turns... Worf tells him ramming speed into the Borg cube, and he turns around, and the Enterprise is like, "It's the Enterprise," and it's Adam Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, nice!
Yeah, he was around for a lot earlier than I thought he was. Yeah. He kept popping up. He has a giant role in The Aviator.
Wow,
Martin Scorsese's The Aviator. I'm like, wait a second, what? Where did this guy come from? I didn't hear of him until Party Down.
That side note, completely. You know, hey, it's bad news, everybody. It's a Living in L.A. story that I was. I was at a thing with some other dads from my kid's school.
It's clobbering place.
We're talking and I was like, yeah, I do I'm a podcaster and I'm talking about that. And he's like, oh yeah, like my I was at this thing. I was at my brother's house and I was talking to his friend, and his friend does he and a buddy of his, they do this podcast where they go through all of like REM songs. I think they did U2 also. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And he's like, yeah. Yeah. So my brother's Adam like has this podcast that I think is really popular. I was like, it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard of it.
Did you mention how it's not nearly as good or revelatory as the one that goes through all the Devo songs?
I did actually bring up ABC Devo after that.
You should have said
more than one song.
Because they did, because I think they're doing Talking Heads now, right, those guys? Or they just did Talking Heads not too long ago?
No, they switched to Talking Heads right in the middle of doing a different band, right? U2, I think.
I don't know.
There was like an episode. U2 is terrible.
They started talking about one band, and then in one episode, they got to talking about Talking Heads. And right in the middle of the episode, they said, you know what? This is a Talking Heads show now. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
That's cool.
Well, I haven't really listened to that show, but I think I did listen to that episode because I heard about it and I needed to hear this like change of format right in the middle of the episode. Totally. Of a popular, you know, like they had massive sponsorships and stuff. And it's like, we can do whatever we want, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, people aren't really listening for the analysis. They're listening for the hosts, for the people. Mm,
right.
Oh, just like hopefully people are listening to this for us and not for hopefully they're careful not analysis, for the analysis of this show.
I don't even know what happened in this episode.
If you want to know all about the episode, this is for all about Pete and John and Tom.
That's right.
And Joe.
I'm just wrangling you guys. You know, I'm just like putting grease in the wheels.
Ew.
Here's something I do like.
The movie Grease. Grease.
Here's something I do like from this episode is we mentioned that, you know, hey, the subcutaneous transponder would be handy. And then it was like something else that doesn't really come up often that's handy is like they use it. First of all, once they get the communicator working, like there's all kinds of stuff they should be doing to solve this problem that they're not. But whatever. They're like, beam down McCoy. Oh, and also have the computer make him a Nazi doctor outfit. Let's call it a major or a colonel. Let's make him a colonel, Nazi doctor. Let's say 1944. And it's like, what? Like, you can just punch all that mustache in and have it like, whoop. Yeah. And I'm like, it makes sense if you could just, you know, if you could replicate food, if you could beam people across. It's not too different from either one of those technologies. But like, I love that. Why don't they use that more? Like, I want them.
Yeah.
I kind of assume they always do. Like, they don't have pea coats in like their wardrobe. They're actually like, you know, making them for going down to the 1920s. Although in that episode, they're in uniform. They get their pea coats afterwards in City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah, they steal them.
That is true. But
the confusing part of this whole bit, though, is that when McCoy arrives, he's in full Nazi regalia, right? He's like a full-on Colonel Klink, and he's trying to put on this boot, and then he stands up and looks around and sees Nazis all around him. He's like, what's going on here? I'm like, wait, you didn't wonder why you were putting a Nazi? I mean, it's
a costume party.
I think he had to have just thought it was a costume party he was going to, dressed as a Nazi for some reason.
He comes down as a pirate. He's like, I don't care. I didn't want to be a Nazi.
This is another one of our problematic balls.
Right. And that scene, I don't know if I got distracted or something, but that scene, they're in there, and then I forget his name. We saw him before in the jail, the kind of poor man's
or Roman Polanski.
The Nazi guy. He's like a Christopher Plummer guy.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about? Oh, wait,
he's the counselor of the thing.
That guy? Or the
guy who stops the guy from torturing them.
Oh, okay.
He's like the kind of British Enig.
That's
Enig. Dude. That's right? Enig. Okay, that's
he's
Enig.
The one. All right. Because there's two, not the
Gene.
Not the sub-Führer, who's the actual one pulling all the strings, but there's the one who is
assistant to the counter-Führer.
Exactly. Who later we find out is part of the resistance, which is why he stops them in that.
But we don't find out about that like until a few scenes later. But in this scene, why does he not recognize Kirk and Spock, even though they're in their tricky Nazi gear?
How come you didn't recognize us?
They don't explain it. They just know they have to address it. They do not explain it.
Just like, well,
they just go, it's crazy that he didn't recognize us, right? Yep, sure is.
I actually appreciate that.
It's terrible. It's like they just didn't write that scene. They look, I can't get out of this problem. Just have them say they don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, they ran out of time or something.
Because it really, there's not that much reason for them to show up, for him to catch them in the, I guess it's like an act break. He walks in and catches them in the closet together as like a suspense thing. But like that moment, him seeing them doesn't really lead anywhere. So that doesn't really need to even be there.
Right.
Well, it harkens to one of my favorite moments in the history of cinema. In the film Halloween.
I've heard of it.
I remember.
Michael Myers when he was 10 years old, is brought to an insane asylum. 10 years later, he breaks out and steals a car and drives off. And I'm oversimplifying for anybody who wants to correct me. And his psychiatrist, Dr. Loomis, played by Donald Pleasance, you know, is arguing with the head of the, the home for the criminally insane. And it's like, well, how do you even learn to drive anyway? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's the guy who let him out. And it's been 2 years since I've watched and I forgot the exact line. Yeah. But I've always sort of loved that, like, John Carpenter was kind of like, okay, listen, there's no way this child could have learned to drive a car while being comatose in an insane asylum. So we're just going to have a throwaway line. Hey, we know it's nonsense, but we need to get this movie to point B. So right, yeah. There you go. Leave me alone.
I told you he's pure evil, so he knows how to drive.
That kind of thing, though, kind of harkens back to City on the Edge of Forever. Is that, no, wait, or is it going to be Piece of the Action? Where they get in the car and Kirk doesn't know how to drive the car.
Yeah, Piece of the Action. Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? It's kind of, I think it's relatively intuitive. Mm-hmm. I don't think you really have to, you could get down the road. You're going to be all over the place and you're not necessarily.
Yeah.
Joe, when you got in the car, did you really not know how to go in the car? You did, didn't you? I mean,
okay,
you turned the key and you hit
the car, but I wish you didn't have to bring it up.
You knew to turn the key. You knew to put it in drive, right?
Being that I took lessons in a rural area, basically the instructor was like, all right, get behind the wheel. Let's go.
And now,
nothing ram into a tree immediately.
Exactly. And if you were clinically insane like Michael Myers, you wouldn't care if you rammed into a tree. You'd just get in the car and go.
Well, let me exhibit A. How many failed road tests do we have among us that we were talking about that? And exhibit B.
I failed one, but I could drive. I failed it because I ran over.
Not
the...
according to the state of Missouri.
But, right. Not yet.
Well, I could drive. It's just like
I could get from one place to the other. Michael Myers doesn't care if he accidentally rolls over the crosswalks, which is what I got taught.
He's not going to be too disappointed if he doesn't signal before turning.
I better not go. I don't know the rules of the road.
But also, in Kirk's defense, it's old-timey car, so it's probably manual transmission, which it's not intuitive.
That's like five on the column.
I would kind of imagine that a manual
transmission
versus a starship is kind of like, yeah, you put me on a horse. I could tell the horse where to go. I could get it on its sides. Yeah. Well, and yes, and Kirk knows how to ride a horse, but I would imagine that basically, accelerator, brake, wheel. That's kind of all you need to know.
Mm.
Well, in a 1920s automobile, I don't even know if they had really like gears or transmission to any real effect.
Well, it was all manual, I think, up until.
Yeah, the automatic transmission wasn't.
But
until,
I mean,
like,
I would also, but
50s
I would imagine
60s.
That like a manual transmission in the aughts or like 1920s was forward backward. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. No, you're right. It didn't have like multiple gears, right? Yep.
They weren't programming it for the Rockies.
He's probably looking for the button that plays Sabotage, which is why he couldn't figure
out. Yeah.
Which one
this
of these
machines go, right?
Makes it scream. Yeah.
I feel like there's got to be some kind of meta thing about the fact that Michael Myers has a Captain Kirk mask on.
I was trying to think of that too. Anybody? Yeah.
John Carpenter clearly homaging Piece of the Action. It's Piece of the Action is the one, right?
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Back to Patterns of Force for a second, because we're not table that.
Okay.
back to Patterns of Force for a second. Millicon, who's the assistant regional Fuhrer. who's the one actually pulling the strings here. Boy, does he have a great reaction to getting shot.
He does. They
get in, they're like, hey, this guy, my professor is asleep, he's been drugged, and they're like, well, we could shoot him full of drugs. They're like, great, let's do that. So wake
and
him up.
mind meld him,
yeah, let's give him all the stimulants you got. Let's get him coked to the gills and then mind meld him. And Spock's probably like, whoa. Because it goes both ways, right? Spock's probably just like, oh, man, hey.
I'm going to sit down. Holy smokes.
you cut back, and Spock's just smoking a cigarette, being like, oh, wow, man.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'll try Mussolini next.
So they get him to go to get on the horn and be like, hey, Millicon's the real problem here. Because he had been drugged up and just using nonsensical, basically, copy paste speeches to spur everybody on while Millicon pulled all the real strings.
Mm-hmm.
At first I was like, wow, a kind of a totalitarian drugged up guy spouting nonsense in charge of the country. What a weird what a crazy sci-fi world.
What would that be like?
Yeah, can't imagine. But then when they get him to kind of say, like, hey, Malachi's the real traitor, and then he runs, and he tries to grab a gun and shoot. He does. He shoots through the window, kills the Fuhrer, and they shoot him. Adam Scott grabs a gun and shoots him, and he has the best reaction to getting shot. He's just like, whoa, like, it's amazing. Like, you know, it's like if you shot
the frying pan sound.
Yeah, if you shot Ernest, it would look the same.
Zoinks.
And then,
Vern.
Weirdly, like, it's very, you know, hey, like, you know, I'm used to dealing with this. You know, it's like, it's just, you know, at the end of Star Wars or Return of the Jedi, it's just like, well, hey, we threw the one guy down the shaft, now we can all be at peace. You know, it's like the same thing where it's like, yeah. All right, good, hey, we shot the bad guy, now everybody go back to not hating your neighbor.
Yeah.
And all, they're
everyone's
like,
gonna
oh,
be cool
good.
With me now taking over, and I'm nice. And I'll do it the right way.
Well, it is a start. One has to admit.
Yeah. No, sure. you might
go through steps
like,
2 through 9 with things like Return to Jedi, but it is a start.
Even with the guys in the room, like, this is like the top brass, or I'll just like, oh, okay, I guess so, you know?
Sorry, guys, but we will need a Nuremberg trial here. It isn't that simple. Also, Judgment at Nuremberg, starring William Shatner.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, that's right.
Sorry, just realized that. But
starring, meaning 10th build, but...
Yeah, he's really good in it, actually.
No, I have no complaints about Judge Van Nuremberg at all.
It's like maybe
starring
the best thing.
Might be a little...
You obviously
he's
didn't
like
look
starring
it up
about the... anyone who has a name in the movie.
If you looked it up on Memory Alpha, it's starring William Shatner.
Yeah, good point. But I mean, he stars in Incubus.
Yeah. Like...
And for good
they're
reason.
They're going to have to like have long trials to deal with all these people that have committed war crimes here. It's just, and I don't know, does the Federation have anything to do with that at this point? Because now they've completely, we're back to the Prime Directive again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've completely smashed it, which they had to. They held off at least. At least they waited until they kind of had to break it. And then, but now that they're involved, do they get deeply involved? Do they like... Well, help these people deal with their problem now and clean up the mess, or
no,
do they just bail?
I'm going to posit something. I don't want to go through too much of a tangent for a multitude of reasons. But if Von Himmler successfully, I think it was Von Himmler attempted to assassinate Hitler via the bomb. That's the guy with one eye and one arm, right?
Valkyrie, right?
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
Yes, Tom Cruise, or a no-name actor in Night of the Generals. But
or whoever you're playing in Beyond Castle Wolfenstein.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if Hitler was assassinated, if Hitler was assassinated by by high members of the Third Reich, and they were then able to surrender to the Allies, or at least forge a sort of peace with the Allies, would they have been able to have their own governmental autonomy, or would they have been subject to Allied forces putting them on trial? Because remember, like, the Germans didn't hold the Nuremberg trials, the Allies did.
Right.
And as the space Germans killed their own space Hitler, one could say that, well, maybe, okay, well, you took care of this. Maybe you can take care of this on your own. Or would the Federation step in and kind of force themselves? And I don't want to use force themselves, because that kind of, I'm not trying to imply that, the Allies forced themselves in Germany. Please do not misunderstand me. But like that, if they were able to kind of proclaim a sort of governmental autonomy, would they have been able to sort of brush away their sins / take care of their problems on their own without outside interference?
Well, I mean, and Japan was occupied, right? So Japan, they surrendered.
Yes.
Obviously not peacefully, but it would require occupation. I don't know if the Federation, that's the question. Does the Federation occupy a country
or
a planet?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like that maybe they can't.
I feel like they would
even
offer
if they've broken
assistance.
The Prime Direct. Yeah, I wonder at what level. There's got to be like a diplomatic. We know there is diplomats in the Federation. There's got to be a diplomatic wing of the Federation that's peacefully deals with all this stuff. And there's probably a starship or two nearby in case it all gets out of hand or something. But
sometimes
I don't know if the Federation would occupy a planet. Yeah, sometimes
it is just it's just like whoever is nearby. Just be like, all right. See, here it seems like they just got the hell out of there. And maybe they did send. Peacekeepers. But it is an interesting question as to like whether, if they had basically stepped back and been like, well, hey, we got rid of that problem. Sorry about all the mess. instead of, you know, having to be forcibly defeated? Like, if they, you know, surrendered and walked it back rather than being defeated, would that still be the same? But I think, John, your example, your real world example of Japan is kind of, you know, there'd be sanctions, but there wasn't the same level of like, hey, you know, you guys are, some of you guys are going to hang for this, okay?
And if we go, if we keep it in the Star Trek verse, in Star Trek VI, when when the Klingon Empire more or less surrenders to the Federation, or is willing to broker a peace with the Federation, there's never any talk of like, well, what about the guy? What about Krug and his, the killing of Kirk's son? I mean, that's Kirk's issue, but it's not really an issue with the Federation High Command. And that is just one of what would imagine would be what one would imagine would be many war crimes of the Klingon Empire.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because Krug was off the reservation, right? Like he had gone rogue and wasn't really part of this was not sanctioned by the Klingon Empire. So I imagine they had some buffer with things like that. It seems like every time a Klingon really does something awful, it is that, I think.
There's some plausible deniability.
Turns out the Klingons are actually very reasonable, diplomatic. And, they talk a big game about
issue with bratty captains. Strong commanders.
They have guys that just go off the deep end real quick. Yep. Well, it's that virus. That's the problem.
I mean, the Federation, has guys that do that too.
Yeah,
they're called Commodores.
Yeah.
Yes. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's the, speaking of which, we get our history professor here gets like, we've gotten him to, so we can answer questions. We've gotten him, we pumped him full of drugs and put him in exposition mode.
Gave him Vulcan magic, lest we forget.
let's get him to explain what's going on, and his idea that like, all right, well, you know, like Nazi Germany would be great if it wasn't for all the hate, you know. It's
right.
Like a something that I've heard espoused before, and I you
well,
know
sure
by our former that, president.
The more that we learn about stuff, and like there, you know, there's lots of historical evidence now to be like, no, it was a mess. It was a disaster. It looked, they put up a good front, but it was also like lots of infighting and backstabbing and all this stuff. And it wasn't, you know, they were able to rally a lot, but there was also, you know, it was a complete mess. And so it's
building the Volkswagen and Mercedes factory does not take away the sin of genocide.
Right. I do like that the trains ran on time, but
well, that was really more nice. Mussolini.
I know. Well, I'm generalizing.
The interstate highway was pretty cool. Yeah. That's helped us out a lot, stealing that idea. But
yeah, they do point out that, you know, naturally that, like, well, that, you know, eventually somebody's going to come along and screw it up. Like, have that kind of power, you have that kind of machine, somebody's going to come along and screw it up, which is true, which is the problem with all kinds of things. It's my main argument with libertarianism. It's like, well, no, everybody's just looking out for themselves. Like, we're going to... All right.
Can I go in a libertarian?
No.
The thing is, they really like their independence so long as they have a governmental system that enables it, which kind of contradicts... Never mind.
Exactly.
Look, I saw somebody the other day describe libertarianism as, like, libertarians as basically being like cats, where they think they have are fully autonomous and they're actually the rulers of the whole world, but they're completely dependent on everything around them and someone to feed them. And
they're autonomous
take care of them.
As long as somebody else knows how to use a can opener.
Yeah.
Where's my dish of food?
They're gonna sit here and complain and complain and complain until somebody shovels their poop out of the box.
Sorry, all you libertarians.
Yeah.
But I would also, when it comes to the sort of the idea of like, I figured, you know, 30s fascist Germany would be the best way to get this planet on track. Like, there are probably, I mean, and I'm speaking very broadly, I'm sure there are a lot of authoritarian regimes in Earth history. And I mean, and I'm even going up until like 1966 Earth history that are not the best, but not totally reprehensible to any sort of moral idea, you know. You could do a kind of like, yeah, they were tough and maybe like you know, the freedoms that they allowed people weren't the best, but nobody were there's no mass murder camps,
right.
Yeah. And but to be fair, also, like, it is, I think, the best the best trick that John Meredith Lucas pulled here is making the instead of making it like an admiral or a commodore went rogue, it's a history professor, because there's a lot of history students who are a little bit too fascinated with Nazi Germany, and I can see that easily being like, oh, well, you know what? What if we?
But and there's also, there's a fun fact, like if you examine if you examine ancient Rome, if you examine the Mongols, and if you examine the Caliphate, one of the things that they all did that you know, kind of caused them to get large, you know, to have control of large areas of land, is that they never hoisted religion on other people.
Right.
You know, broadly speaking, obviously, but like it was a sort of, but you know, it was kind of like terrible things were done, because obviously this is, you know, from the year one to the year 1200, but you know,
it's a big sample size.
Yeah, but like, you know, terrible things were done, but at the same time, there was a kind of like, yeah, if you let people live like people and they just have to swear allegiance to a central government, you're going to do a lot better as a dictator than if you actually force your ideals upon them.
Right.
So, you know, something to go for, all of you future dictators.
While speaking of future
dictators.
I'm looking
at you, Fusco.
Yeah. Speaking of future. Jeez. Speaking of future dictators, we got to point out the three real things and a future thing. Three truths and a lie, where they were talking about, you know, like, oh, you know, all the popular, you know, fascists of your time. Napoleon, Hitler, Lee Kuan.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Lee Kuan. All right.
I swear they do that. They do Lee Kuan in another one, right? I think in whom I think Lord Garth. I think he pulls out Lee Kuan, but then he goes like another couple more. I think he's got like a Crotus and a Micmac two or something, or a
Knickknack.
Oh, what?
Herbie Velasquez and
Knickknack Tabasco.
But I do love the two real things and the completely made up. They do that in they do it all the way up to the Next Generation. They do it. Bach, the Beatles, the Klingon operas,
James Stewart, the actor droid,
the various types of heaven there are, and also alien heavens in Star Trek V, the Final Frontier.
It's great.
Whom gods destroy? So we got a while before we get to Lee Kuan, but yes, he does come up.
I don't know.
Fleet Captain Garth. No, Fleet Captain Garth.
Lord Garth
comes.
Oh, Fred. That's whom gods destroy.
talks about how he was. He'll go farther than Lee Kuan, Alexander, Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler, and Crotus.
Crotus.
Old Crotus.
Wait, is that the guy in the God of War video games? No, that's Kratos. My mistake.
Okay.
Okay.
Here, the rest of my. So anyway, episode ends. They're like, "Well, that's funny, Nazis." And they have like interesting, like they're like doodle 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 doo is a little bit of like a like fairly like philosophical political conversation where they're talking about absolute power corrupts absolutely and stuff like that. And it's interesting. It's not just purely for laughs, but it also is a little bit light and, you know.
Yeah.
But then the rest of my notes are kind of background info. I do like I'm sure they, there was a little bit of joy, a little bit of a chuckle when they needed Nazi headquarters, and they decided just to dress up the Paramount headquarters as Nazi Nazi headquarters. They're like, then let's see. There's some cast notes here. Skip Hohmeyer.
Skippy.
He's Melikon. He's the kind of the main big bad here. And we will see him again, because Skip Melikon is also Dr. Severin in The Way to Eden. Also, he is in The Ghost of Mr. Chicken, which, of course, that's bonus points for anybody. If they can be linked, if they're a one link to Don Knotts. Eneg was played by Patrick Horgan, who did a lot of things, but I think most notably in my book was the narrator of Zelig.
Huh. Wow.
We've got Lev Mailer, who also sometimes is known as Ralph Maurer. Maurer?
I really thought you were going to say Ralph Mouth, and I got really excited.
We've got Norman Mailer, also known as Ralph Mouth. I don't know what's going on here, but... I forgot what there's a reason why
he's
Lev
not
Mailer...
to Donnie most.
Lev Mailer, we will absolutely see... we've seen him before, I think. He's one of these guys who's in a bunch of stuff, but we will completely see him again when we get to Return of the Archons, because he's totally the like, hey, brother, you haven't heard of Red Hour? Like that guy on the street. I forgot the exact line, but he's
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the guy. His eyes are a little bit narrow and he's got a big,
your
big
daddy
wide
can
smile.
Put them up, Candy.
Yeah. So yeah. That
he's one of those guys who's of the body.
Yeah. Aren't you?
Oh, are you not of the body? These two? I thought he came up before. Oh, let's see. No. Oh, he's buddies with Mark Leonard.
Hmm.
And
some points just for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also in the thriller Jigsaw with Michael J. Pollard and James Doohan. And
now what? I have a new movie I have to see.
Yes, exactly. Like what? Wait, is that?
1968 Jigsaw. I don't know it. But no. He also
directed by Howard Hawks. What?
And he also did a lot. Ended up doing a lot of voice work later, and I think he's still alive.
Hmm.
Yeah, looks like it.
He's still alive.
and then we got Benji Bancroft, who not only does he have a great name, Benji Bancroft is just one of the, let's see what he's listed as here, uncredited co-stars. First of all, I love that one of the uncredited co-stars is Adolf Hitler as Adolf Hitler.
How'd they get him?
But
that sounds like a police squad.
Rex Harrison as Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, and we got to bring him back up again. Look closely at one of the SS troopers, Basil Poledouris.
Wow. All right.
And you'll also see a lot of these regular. Eddie Paskey is a resistance guy. Jeannie Malone is an SS general's wife. Like, there's all these, you know. Roger Holloway is another SS, like all these guys who you've seen, like the guys who are walking around the background always, this time they're walking around the background as Nazis or sometimes resistance members.
I feel we would be negligent if we didn't mention the director of Jigsaw is James Goldstone, who directed Where No Man Has Gone Before and What Are Little Girls Made Of?
Oh.
Two episodes that we will be approaching at the tail end of this series.
Have an egg roll, Mr. Sound Goldstone.
You only get that with six.
Yeah.
No, with two Star Trek episodes, you get egg roll. Isn't that what the play was about? I thought.
So Benji Bancroft, Ecosian Brigade Führer. So I'm not sure exactly who.
Oh, that.
Yeah, you know him. Ecosian Brigade Führer. Played by Benji Bancroft. And Benji Bancroft he was just totally like one of these guys who's in everything. If you look, he's also got kind of like these like kind of slim eyes, and he looks almost like he almost looks like Bert Lahr or something. Like he's got a weird kind of like a slim. He shows up again what is that? Almost 20 years later, Star Trek III, Search for Spock. He's one of the Vulcan priests in the background.
Oh, wow.
But in between then, he's in a lot of things that we like to talk about. He was on...
Is it Villain Mission Impossible?
Nine episodes of...
Columbo.
Nine episodes of Heart to Heart.
Oh, wow.
As different characters each time, it looks like. Party guest, bodyguard. Hotel guest, party guest. Opera guest, exhibit guest. Worker, police officer. He was in The Nude Bomb. He was in Airplane.
Wow.
Ooh, hey.
He was one of the reporters in Airplane, presumably one of the ones that runs into the
phones.
Phone
yeah.
So
he's a stuntman as well. I think all those guys got stunt pay that day.
Yeah. Rockford Files, Starsky and Hutch, and I figured you guys would love that he was on three different Columbos.
Wow.
He was on Now You See Him as police officer, uncredited.
My favorite. Yeah.
He was in The Most Dangerous Match as chess match observer, uncredited.
Mm. Pretty good one.
And coincidentally, Dagger of the Mind.
Dagger of the Mind.
Hey!
Which
interesting.
Is not only a Star Trek episode, but a Columbo episode, and he played party guest, uncredited.
Mm. He's good at playing party guest.
Oh, because they shot, I think they shot the, because Dagger of the Mind's the London one, right?
That's the British one, yeah.
But I do think they shot into all the interiors in LA, so that makes sense. I was like, wait, what was he in England for? But I think they only sent Peter Falk over to England to walk around, and then they shot it all in LA.
Next to Big Ben. Yeah.
But
look, do you think the time's right on that?
It's a minute slow.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you check your watch?
Mission Impossible, two different episodes. All kinds of My Three Sons, Banachek, Kolchak the Night Stalker.
So what you're saying is he was on a lot of TV.
You're saying is he's the king of television. Yeah. Got it.
Little House, Police Story, Shaft, the TV series.
Mm. Not the
that
best.
I've never
not,
seen.
Yeah, not,
I'm
not
sure it's
movies.
Not. Or I would have heard of it.
On our next Subspace Chatter, I will give you my review of the Shaft TV series.
Everybody knows not to tune in to this thing they have no idea about.
I know what to avoid.
I see. I don't have to listen to that episode.
No. Uncredited
sneak preview. Not the best.
Uncredited. We're getting back into. He was the bailiff. Uncredited in Robin and the Seven Hoods. He was the dealer, uncredited, in X, the man with the X-ray eyes.
With Ray Milland and Don Rickles.
Yeah.
So, Pete, how does
chauffeur,
this
uncredited,
rank?
And Manchurian Candidate. This is turning into the Benji Bancroft. Just like we were talking about how Adam Scott and Scott Aukerman just turned their show into a different show, this is a Benji Bancroft show from now on. We're just going to...
I call this a casting director kind of episode.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That falls in the casting director.
Now we're a Benji Bancroft, CDEFG, and that's it. We're just covering his filmography from here on in. What is this? I had a hard time thinking about what this episode falls under because it's not really command. It's not like any hard decisions are made.
It's not science.
It's not, hey, you know what? I'm gonna add a new one right now.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna call it a communications episode because it's a miscommunication of ideas. That leads to this. And I can think of another episode where that's going to come up pretty soon. I feel like I gave Omega Glory, probably I gave it an engineering, but that could have been a communications episode too.
Mm, sure.
So I'll call it a communications episode.
Right.
And I also found myself, like we joked at the beginning, everybody knows this one is, it's the Nazi one. And I feel like it gets lumped into, all these like, and they show up on a planet and it's a different, a different version.
Cowboys,
of the same.
Gangsters, Nazis. Yeah.
But I found
my favorite episodes all.
Yeah. It's got good Star Trek in it. Like I found myself enjoying it more than I thought I would. Like, I feel like the plot progresses nicely. Like I feel like if it wasn't Nazis, if it was something else, it would have fared better because that kind of distracts from the fact that it's like, it's got a plot that moves and it's got good Star Trek-iness to it, some good Kirk and Spock stuff. And then they're doing things and they're a little bit worried about the Prime Directive, but not really. And, there's.
Yeah.
So I was impressed with how much I liked it, but I'm not exactly sure what that translates into. I did enjoy it. I'm a little bit I think I'm gonna go somewhere in the B family.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a flat B, maybe a plus. I don't know. I'm somewhere around there. Like I enjoyed
it. I assumed
it.
Naturally that you'd either be a queen or a drone, but
yeah,
okay, fine.
Mm. it's Coco Beware. That's the
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Oh.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't know. Where am I with this? I don't. They're not like they don't. They're not glib with the Nazi stuff, but it's a little jokey, but it has to be to lighten it up. It's not like, I don't know. So I'm not going to take away from that. So I'll say a B+. Why not?
I would say a B+. I was going to say B+ too. It's not only is it a nice Star Trek episode, it's a nice TV episode.
It moves.
It's solid. It moves. There's not a lot of wasted time. The cut, they cut between scenes really nicely in this one. They're like they finish one thing, they cut right to the next thing. Like, there's not a lot of wasted, fat or anything, and it's got some light humor that works effortlessly, and it's good. And I also like it because it feels a little bit like a Mission Impossible.
Hmm.
It's got that kind of like we're on a mission, we're sneaking around,
and it's impossible. Yeah.
It's impossible, but we're gonna do it anyway. I like that. And it feels like I said before, like playing Castle Wolfenstein, the original. Right. You're just running around, shooting Nazis, taking their uniforms, trying to pass yourself off. It's good.
All right.
B+.
What do you got?
I give it a B-.
Ooh.
Okay.
Not for any other reason than that's what I was thinking before anybody said anything.
That's valid.
That's not to say I like it less. I don't know if I like it less than you guys. That's just what I was thinking. But I thought it was a solid episode. Yeah. It's fine. It's nothing crazy. It's nothing great. But it's good. Serviceable Trek.
It all makes sense, which hasn't happened in the last few episodes we've watched.
No, it's a lot better than the Omega Glory.
Well, there are a couple of moments where it's just like, wait a minute, why don't they just beam him out, or why don't they? But it's like, then it's like, all right, well, or they, why don't they just beam him some phasers or something like that? But like, nitpickiness is different than it all makes sense. It all, like, that's a different level. Well, what the bones are there. Well, bones is there. You beam down as a Nazi, but the structure is there.
What's going on?
I get it. Everything makes sense. Joe, what do you got?
So, you know, every Thanksgiving, and we've just passed Thanksgiving, I watch King Kong, a little movie you may have heard of.
Sure.
And every year I notice something different about it. And this particular year, while I was watching it, one of the things that I picked up on was like, wow, you know, you have like 30 minutes in New York, but like, you know, you have 30 minutes in New York in the ship. Once you get to Skull Island, it is just, you know, it is a freight train of nonstop guerrilla fighting dinosaurs, guerrilla fighting New York. Like the final hour and 20 minutes is just, it is ridiculously like fast pitch. And that's kind of what I felt about Patterns of Force. Like whether this is the perfect episode of Trek or not is up for debate. Well, not really. It's not. But pacing wise, it is like, it is a freight train. It just sort of like, bam, bam, bam. You're never bored watching this one. And for that, it gets a solid B. You know, there's other good things about it, but you guys kind of covered that. Yeah, solid B, kind of like King Kong, except King Kong is, you know, basically, if a movie was a parent, it would be King Kong. A movie was my parent, specifically. I'm an orphan.
That's so sad.
All right, so that goes in the Enterprise B list. Look at that. We got a new entry there into the, it's pretty good. But guess what? We'll talk about driving next week because P is for Prime Directive, because we keep doing this thing where we're going to visit a different society that's the same, because we're doing Piece of the Action next week.
Oh, thank goodness.
Get your JoJo Krakos out, and let's hit the road. We will see you next week.
Normally, we'd have our payback. Next episode, we're going to have our tayback.
Oh,
whoa.
Look at that.
Oh, give me the heaters, Kirk.
We will see you here next week on ABCD TOS. Pew-pew!
That's it.
No Nazi jokes? No?
John has to go.
John has to go.
I really got to go.